Good afternoon. We will open House Revenue Committee, and we will open a work session on House Bill 2052. Mass, we've worked 2052 once previously.
Indeed, Mr. Chair, we did on January 31st, and to refresh your memory, what it does, House Bill 2052 increases the maximum of the limit, the bond limit, by $500 million for Department of Housing and Community Service from a $2 billion to $2.5 billion. And what those amounts are used basically to sell the bonds that are exempt from taxes, which allows the department to use that spread in order to furnish loans for low-income housing and loans of both single-family and multifamily units. And the last time we've talked about default rates and how fast and why the increases in, are occurring, and how the national Oregon housing costs, national and Oregon housing costs, and how they, the escalating rates of those housing costs are different. Now, one thing on your revenue impact that's a little different from the previous one is the amounts that we have for 07-09. The last time we had them at about $344 million, and that is still the case when you look at them on net amounts. But the mechanism by which those bonds are done, that they go through a process of short-term, floating, and then long-term, and they use the short-term until that long-term issue occurs, and then they're repaid in the same 07-09. So if you net it all out, it comes back to a net amount of increase of about $344 million.
Worth of additional bonds that would be floated.
Right.
And we previously, Matt, we each received the information from the history of the state long-term bond program. The direct revenue bonds, appropriation, and general obligation bonds, that debt history chart, and the amount that the housing anticipated, the growth and need for this, and explaining the reason why we're asking for a 2.5 new upper limit versus the 2 million, which is presently in statute.
Yes, Mr. Chair. They would reach that limit, the $2 billion, towards the end of the 05-07 by any. But 07-09 is definitely going to reach it. However, within the time, because it goes up and down, they would bump into that limit. So they needed that.
With higher interest rates, Maz, there's some indication that in higher interest rates that there would be more demand for the program?
Mr. Chair, I would presume that this would be the case with both increasing interest rates and as well as
a higher cost per home.
Right. Escalation, especially in the last few days with the news that although the national housing markets might be cooling, Oregon's market have not seen the same type of slowdown.
Now, as we do not do dynamic modeling in this process that would show that if we put out $244 million more of actual bond proceeds on the market, that would tend to spur on jobs and the economy in Oregon. We just all we say is we're we just static model that there is no effect of the general fund revenue.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. However, the amount of housing and the demand for the construction jobs and so on, this would already be in the anticipation for the general economic outlook within the state. maybe the deduction in that would be otherwise growth, but as current levels go, it is anticipated within that process.
Colleagues, we've all received an opportunity to have heard this back at the end of January, this particular bill, and we also received information at that time from the Housing and Community Services. Jack Kenney has been here to explain and give us some graphs and so forth. I think we handled the questions at that time. Are there any further questions of legislative staff? And the, let's see, 2052 has a subsequent referral to?
Yes, sir. Has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Ways and Means.
And that's what basically we would think the more rigorous fiscal impact statement would occur in the budgetary type of expenditure.
And that would probably be something within the Housing and Community Services folks within their budget as they're examining their budget down there.
Okay.
Not general funds, in other words.
Mr. Chair, question of
Representative Boquist, please.
There's no general fund impact at all, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Boquist, that's correct. The amounts of the debt and the bond proceeds, mm-hmm. when they come into what's termed as a non-limited funds, which is what governs the proceeds coming in and then going out in the same time. So it's not general.
Follow-up question?
Follow-up,
Representative. I'm just trying to get myself educated. You said that if this is approved, then it would already be built into the state economist's model in anticipation of these funds being in the economy as part of the dynamics of the economy. I lost you there on that. Because when the question raised, well, how many jobs will it create, how much revenue, so on and so forth, you indicated it was already be built in. Can you explain that slightly for me?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Marquis, when the state economist builds or looks at the model of the state economy, there is a certain assumption of how many units of, let's say, new housing would be built, or how many units would require how many jobs in construction. Mm-hmm. Under the assumption is that there is a certain demand and this demand will be satisfied somehow. So those amounts that, because the program have been going on for years, have already in a way built in structurally within mm-hmm. the model, and they don't necessarily have this spelled out whether it is those bonds on their own. So if otherwise there is a shock to the system, meaning you pull out an amount of capitalization out of the system in total, or you add it in, then that shock will make a difference in the system. But accordingly, this is primarily as you would see in that anticipation, it is going in the same rate that it has been going on before.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions of legislative staff? The chair is seeking a motion of a due pass. Representative Boquist.
I move that we, with a due pass and referral to Ways and Means.
The motion is that the House Committee on Revenue pass House Bill 2052 with a due pass recommendation and subsequent referral to Ways and Means, that we refer 2052 to the Ways and Means, Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Are there any further discussion in this regard? Any objections to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, we will move House Bill 2052 to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. And we will then close the work session on 2052. I'll now open a work session on 2054, House Bill 2054.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2054 is also a bill that comes to us from the Housing and Community Services, and we have heard this down in the same day that we've heard 2052, that's in January 31st. And what the bill does, it basically allows this change first on the excuse me, in the threshold of the amounts of loan that would be allowed for a single family from $150,000 that currently is in statute, to move it to the to discretion of the department to have those by rule.
So it deletes the $150,000 limit that is presently within the statute.
Yes.
And that establishes council loan approval by rule then.
Now, within that ability, that will be adjusted according, of course, to the housing prices and so on. But also, once those are set, the exceptions will still go to the housing council, and they will go through public hearings and reviews and so on. Now, the other thing that the bill does, just to refresh your memory again, is the this extension of from 42 to 47 years of the loan bond, and also allows for rule-making process on differentiation between community service programs and housing programs. And the last time there was a discussion that members of the committee had with the Deputy Director of Housing about the issue of the extension from 42 to 47 years, and why is it serving the purpose better? Now, we don't see an impact then or now. However, you probably would find in your, most likely would find in your packet a fiscal impact statement from our fiscal office. And at this point, what they've concluded, that the fiscal impact from the bill is indeterminate because of the differences that they were not able to determine how the impact of the interest rates, how many proposed loans will be greater than $150,000, and all these variations that are not 100% determined at this point. And since this is going to be out of non-limited funds, they don't expect it to be an impact on the budget, on the budget situation of the department. That's a statement that we did not have the last time when we were discussing this bill.
So there, is there any? Did you try and describe any fiscal impact to the lease guarantees? That should give a greater opportunity for the flow of real property. But these are all personal residences, and to the extent they're worth less than $250,000, then that probably doesn't generate anything more than just turns in the economy.
And not to the general funds or to the budgets themselves and expenditures.
Of course, in that process, Maz, the largest single sector of our economy has been the financing and that end of it this last time. So this actually should continue to hold that spur just a little bit longer. That's probably already in the forecast again. Is that what you're going to tell us?
In the employment forecast, I think that is the basis for the general fund income and so on, that we see our revenues come. That is just like the Prego sauce kind of thing.
It's all in there. It's all in there. This is, we're going to call this the Prego sauce bill, folks. Okay.
As long as the spaghetti bill, that's
spaghetti bill. No, we won't call it the spaghetti bill. Let's call it the Prego bill. Any further questions of staff? Maz, can you direct me to the section that moves the the housing bond maturity period from 42 to 47 years. I'm sorry.
That would be the last section, Mr. Chair, and it would be section 5, or in the last page, page 4.
Yes. Okay, there
it is. When you're looking at line 2, okay. It just deletes the 42 and injects the 47.
So that's the 5-year extension. Excellent, thank you. Further questions of staff? The chair has been seeking a motion that we move House Bill 2054 to the full House with a due pass recommendation.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Riley moves that House Bill 2054 move to the full House with a due pass recommendation. Any objections to that motion? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. And we'll ask Representative Olson if he'll take that to the floor. He's been feeling somewhat neglected, I think, in the past. So we'll make sure that he, we didn't tell him there was going to be a test on this later. So.
Okay.
All righty. We will then close the work session on House Bill 2054. Thank you very much, colleagues. And we'll then open a public hearing on House Bill 2446. Paul?
Chair, this House Bill 2446 is the first of a series of committee bills that you introduced about a week and a half ago. So now it's come back to you as in its bill form. This is a bill that the Revenue Committee considers each session, and it comes to us from Legislative Council, and that's author is in the audience. It corrects errors and repeals obsolete material in the Oregon tax statute. So it's really designed as an update of the statutes to ensure their consistency and conformity, and each interim. Dexter goes through the statutes and spends a lot of time putting this together. And this is the product of that effort, House Bill 2446.
So this is what Dexter does for those other 18 months. Oh, okay. I wondered what it was that he didn't keep something. Dexter, would you like to come forward, please? Give us an accounting of what you did for the last 18 months, please, Dexter.
Mr. Chair, members, good afternoon. Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council Office. And I'd love to take the credit for this. But actually, most of these changes are recommended to me by our copy editing staff, which is a staff of about 25 or 30 that are during the session are occupied in proofreading and copy editing your bills. But during the interim, their primary task is to assemble the next edition of the Oregon Revised Statutes. And in that process, they, and the attorneys do this too, but identify certain inconsistencies and very technical mistakes that exist in the statutes and make recommendations. And then I review them, and this is the product of that process.
So this is the correction of erroneous material in Oregon tax law.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
That's what my wife does with my tax return every year when I hand it to her. She tries to ferret out the erroneous material in the tax return. So. Okay. How do you want to go through this, Dexter?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just probably the best thing is that I'm available for questions, and I'll just this bill is a little bit different from ordinary bills in that there's a one-line note at the end of each section explaining.
Actually, it's at the beginning, isn't it? Because it looks like, for instance, I'm looking at page 3 there, line 23, improves word usage, and it looks like that's the changing rural for non-urban.
No, it seems to be.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's for section 2. But in section 2, you've actually added a bunch of issues there, terms there. Is that I guess in section 3 improves word usage there, changes rural for non-urban. That's a valid. Dexter, when you start to define enterprise zones, what it means, those kinds of things, are there any folks that that get excited about that?
Mr. Chair, we can take section 2 as an example. Yes, it changes. It doesn't add any substantive definition. It changes the term non-urban enterprise zone to rural enterprise zone. But the substance of the section is identical as the portion that's deleted lines 39 through.
So substance from one bill to the next is identical.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Mr. Chair. There should be no substantive changes in this legislation. I've shared this with the Department of Revenue, and they have gone through it and not identified any concerns. And there was an earlier version of this as well, and I've not received any feedback on any negative concerns from anyone there either.
Representative Hass is recognized.
Dexter, as a former journalist, there was in my past quite a bit of debate over which versus that. I see that you and your editors have voted for that over which, and I'm just wondering what school of Strunk and White's philosophy that falls under, and but there's quite a few of those changes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hass, that's correct. It's the opinion of our office that which actually indicates parenthetical material. In other words, if you could put parentheses around the clause and it makes sense, then which is appropriate. But otherwise, it should be that. And in most instances, in statutory language, that is appropriate.
Mr. Chair, that's a good rule of thumb. I'm going to remember that myself.
I'm going to have to write it down.
That is the best descriptor I've ever heard of that difference.
Which is?
That. That is. Thank you for the question, Representative Ross.
And so, Dexter, you're telling us that we should probably take this back and make sure that we have had an opportunity to look it over, or is it the standard fare that this committee would just go ahead and take your word for exactly what you're telling us is going on here?
Well, Mr. Chair, I have questions before we do that.
Okay. Well, we're not in a work session, so we're going there just yet. Okay. Representative Boquist?
Mr. Chair, I'm not smart enough to know the answer to whether this is really a question or not, but on page 19, it redefines personal property means and tangible personal property, and we had this discussion on whether livestock were in or out on property tax, and on the surface, I can't quite spell under section 30, which begins on section page 18 and going through, but it does say personal property now means tangible personal property that does include livestock. Does that mean we're going to assess property taxes on cows and livestock as we discussed previously in this committee? Not that we discussed it previously. Or just what is the meaning of this statute?
Mr. Chair, Representative Boquist, first of all, there is a specific exemption from property tax for livestock. This statute merely says that livestock is an example of tangible personal property. And I also note that that language is existing law. There's nothing new there. It's not boldface.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please follow up, Representative.
That's mean we don't want to change it. We are rechanging, before we had personal property, and then we a definition of personal property, and then we had another definition of tangible personal property. And so wherever it's cited previously of personal property is now defined as what was previously defined as tangible personal property. Where did I find if we had a means to insert personal properties, there must be personal property listed after this section or before this section.
Mr. Chair, Representative Oakley, it's actually in lines 2 through 4, right above. And this is really eliminating the unless otherwise specifically provided language, which is not does not conform with legislative form and style. That's always the case. And you'll see that language is also present in page 18, lines 31 and 32, unless otherwise specifically provided. So once again, this is an example where you're not really changing anything. You're just conforming the statute to legislative form and style as adopted in your rules. And I think kind of in a broad picture scheme, the best way to look at this is kind of like getting an oil change in your car. Nothing will happen to your car if you skip a change when it's due. But if you eventually don't take care of it, there could be a problem. And I think that's really the analogy that these revisers' bills represent in the legislative process.
Revisers' bill. Okay, Representative Riley.
I like your analogy, but part of that analogy is also you got to use the right kind of oil. And I think that we want to make sure that this is the right kind of oil that we're using here. And it, as I see it, what you're doing here is simply removing a lot of words, including personal estate, that's being removed, and reducing this definition from personal property and or personal estate means tangible personal property to simply personal property means tangible personal property. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, that is correct. And personal property, if you look through the statutes, personal property is used much more prevalently than tangible personal property. Okay.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Yes, Representative Boquist.
Since we're using the oil change as an analogy, 3,000 miles from now we'll have to go back and change it again. And so I guess my question is, as I understand the verbiage, but if we have an exemption under, this is in the tax code, if we have an exemption for property taxes, and Section 30 says as used in property tax, so this is a property tax section, we already have an exemption for livestock. At the next 3,000-mile change, why don't we just delete the word livestock in the text if we already have an exemption for it?
Mr. Chair, because, Representative Oakley, because if in the future, if ever there was a decision that tangible personal property would be subject to tax, then unless someone remembered that, oh, tangible personal property does not include livestock, that would still remain exempt.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
So my point is the same. At the next 3,000-mile oil change, I'd like to remove livestock.
You can certainly do a bill for that, Mr. Representative Boquist. Representative Olson?
No, that's fine. That's fine.
Refereeing?
Okay. The plural of terminal is
termini.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Boquist.
Follow up question on page 40, section 73. Obviously, there was a problem between referees for soccer matches as independent contractors. I'm just wondering out loud, is there another section? Do we need to be adding in referees for basketball games and so on and so forth like that? And then that's still a, it's actually a serious question here. I mean, if they are considered independent contractors, are we fixing a complaint that there may be other complaints for, Mr. Chair?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Boquist, again, this is a non-substantive bill. If you look at the note, it references, it tells you to go over to sections 115 and 116 of the bill, which hopefully are there. There we go.
Very
likely. And In that one, it referenced, there's a special provision for referees in soccer matches, and I don't know why that's there. But because last session the legislature chose to bifurcate the definition of independent contractor for unemployment compensation purposes and for tax purposes, there was some confusion about the treatment of this just preserves the treatment that the legislature provided for in for soccer referees. So again, there's no substantive change here. It's just saying that the provision, it's carrying through the legislature's call that they wanted a separate definition of independent contractor for employment purposes and for income tax purposes.
But you can put that in the same bill, right, Mr. Chair, that the cattle are in?
Cattle and soccer refs?
As I recall, colleagues, those of you who are new to the process this session, my recollection is, and Representative Hass may bear me out on this, that the discussion of the referees issue last session got a little bit rough and tumble. Remember, that's when referees were getting occasionally thumped by parents, and one got killed.
Yep.
And Oregon came out and said, "Folks, we're gonna address that in statute." And so I can appreciate that.
What about baseball? Are we gonna include that?
That's a good bill for you, Representative. Go ahead.
The umpire bill.
Colleagues, please, while we're in public session, public hearing on this, if any of you have some degree of angst or want to go ahead and have an opportunity to study this bill, if you want to have an opportunity to study this bill, would you throw your hand wildly in the air? We may have a carrier, Paul, watching. Is there anyone who has an objection to moving the revisers bill forward to the House if we were to have a work session today? Nobody waving their hands wildly. Several people ducking their heads. As I recall, the revisers bill is kind of a fun one to carry, too. One of the revisers bill, anyway.
Mr. Chair, the tradition in the Senate has been to assign it to the Senate President. We did that last session.
That's a good idea.
That's a good idea. Come over for
Let's see. Any indication, Dexter, that there may be other amendments to the revisers bill on the Senate side?
Mr. Chair, I have not heard of any, and it's for the tax revisers bill. Actually, the regular revisers bill, which
is much thicker,
eight times the size.
Yeah. Much thicker.
I believe there is going to be an amendment to that.
Oh, okay.
But that's handled by the judiciary.
Boy, I'm sorry to hear about that. Get the revisers bill reprinted and try and hold that in your folder. Okay, colleagues.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure about that. I've heard that, but I...
All right. Thank you very much. Colleagues, my intention is to go ahead and have a work session at this time on House Bill 2446. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2446. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2446. I would now entertain a motion that House Bill 2446 be moved to the full House with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I would make that motion, and I would add to that that I think we could probably put it in the consent.
I think it's a separate motion.
Consent calendar.
We could certainly discuss that as a separate motion. Let's go ahead and act on the first motion. Representative Riley now moves that House Bill 2446 move to the full House with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Now let's talk about it being on the consent calendar. Where it is a revisor's bill, I don't remember ever seeing the tax revisor's bill on the consent calendar. Is that, Paul, is there a precedent for that?
I don't recall it being on the consent calendar. No.
Mr. Chair,
I should start it.
I would disagree. That I think that there have been enough questions raised by this committee that I think it's fair that the full body gets a chance to look at this. And so I would And I'd be happy to carry it, Mr. Chair.
With that, we will not consider a motion for consent calendar, and we will then close the public hearing on House Bill 2440, or close the work session on House Bill 2446, and Representative Berger will carry 2446 to the full House. With that, colleagues, we are off tomorrow, free day. Next week we start at 1 p.m. Notice the calendars which accompany the document. Thank you, Dexter. The document's on your desk. We will look forward to seeing everyone at even time, 1 o'clock. And thank you very much for your participation. We will close House Committee on Revenue. Thanks again.